Welcome to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese. This is the show that many of you have been waiting for ever so patiently. We're all about Mass Effect 3 around here, ever since the game's release on March 6th. After the Game Developers Conference ended, I sat down for a conversation with Sam Hulick, Chris Velasco, and Sasha Dekitsian to talk about their musical contributions to the Mass Effect 3 experience. None of us had yet finished the game, so the body of the episode is completely spoiler-free. However, some of you asked me to include my thoughts on how Mass Effect 3 ended. You can hear my reaction at the very end of the show. This is something that's very exciting for me. And I think all of you too, because you all, I don't know about you specifically, Chris, but I know that Sasha and Sam play the game. So how is it for...
Oh yeah, I play the game.
Oh, you do too, Chris?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, great. Well then, tell me what you love about playing
exactly.
Mass Effect 3.
Tell us.
I was at the Game Developers Conference last week, so I didn't get to play it all last week when everyone else was. And I just started yesterday, so I've logged in maybe 4 hours.
Excuses.
And how about you, Sasha?
I've pretty much played it since launch day on the PC.
Okay.
And it's been, I don't think I'm close to the end yet, but it's been quite a ride so far. It's a great game.
Indeed. And Sam, you were out at GDC too, so you haven't had
chance. Sasha gave us this excuse that he had work to do, and all this time he's just been playing Mass Effect 3 all week long. He's this close to saving the galaxy.
Yeah. But he didn't help anybody at GDC.
Oh, Sam, you're so asking for it, man.
I don't know how far I am, maybe just like 5-6 hours. I got in Saturday and I played it for a bit and yeah, so I'm still working on it.
Well, 40 hours in for me, and I still don't think I am near the end.
Wow.
But as I was explaining to Sam before Chris and Sasha hopped on the horn, I'm a dawdler, so I always want to find every single upgrade or ammo pack or whatever. So I, you know, I'm slow.
And you're still on the character creation screen.
Yeah,
after 40 hours.
What you have experienced through, you know, working on the game and all of this, I mean, how do you feel about the story in general?
The one thing that really, you know, sort of sucks in quotes, this is Sasha, by the way.
Yes.
To work on a game like that is that, you know, we're gamers ourselves and we love playing the first two games. And it's sort of inevitable that you kind of know the ending just because we scored sort of like the later set of levels in the game. And there's really no way around it. But from what we saw from the beginning, it was very exciting. And I thought it's really fitting. I personally know the real ending myself. Because
yeah.
I tried to save that.
This is Chris. Yeah, we didn't work on the very, very end. I think that was Sam. But I specifically told the guys at BioWare, like, don't tell me anymore. Because they kept sending us levels and... And I'd call him up and I'd be like, ah, God, I know too much. It's amazing to work on a project like this. But, you know, as a fan of the game, too, it also sucks because then you know so much about it. And we know a lot of surprises.
Sam, you wrote music for the end. And I can't remember the name of one of the tracks and I should have had it in front of me. But an ending once and for all or something like that.
Yeah. It's called An End Once and For All. I worked on that cinematic at the end, and I didn't ask too many questions. I just asked enough to get a sense of the scene and how to write it. And I heard there's like a dozen different endings or something crazy, so I've only seen two.
Mm-hmm.
and beyond that, it's still kind of a surprise. I guess I'm just waiting to see for myself.
Was then your favorite part about getting to work on these games for Chris and Sasha? You came in, you know, toward the end, I would say, of the second, but long before the third. And Sam, you've been around since the first. So what's your favorite part?
This is Sasha. When we first played Mass Effect, of course, the first one, the one thing that I really liked or enjoyed was the sort of hybrid sound of the score, sort of merging that arpeggiated synth 80s vibe. That's what I got from it with the orchestra. And I thought it was really unique. And, you know, the game was, of course, great too. I remember back then in E3, people were freaking out and, Mass Effect. So, of course, we were looking at every possibility to get, you know, involved in it. And then when we got the call to work on two of the DLCs for Mass Effect 2, one of which bridges Mass Effect 2 to Mass Effect 3,
yes.
Called Arrival.
Yes.
That gave us a really good chance to, you know, get to know the team, get to know the people that work so hard on these games. And, of course, when the call came for Mass Effect 3, we were very ecstatic and excited about it. And, I mean, gosh, it's been just a ride, you know.
How about Chris and Sam? What are some of your favorite parts about getting to be a part of this?
This is Chris. Besides, you know, just being musically rewarding to work on this, I just think it's, you know, at least in the video game world, Mass Effect has turned out to be, you know, a pretty important piece of sort of sci-fi canon. And
yes.
It makes me feel like this was our chance to work on something cool, like, you know, like Star Wars was. We've done a ton of games, and it's nice to work on one that has all this history and has stuff that people actually care about, rather than there's a bunch of monsters and you got to shoot them and then that's the end. And, you know, this is just, it's so deep. And, you know, you said you're already 40 hours in and not even close to the end yet, maybe. And
yeah,
there's just, it's just a really a lot of depth in the game, and it's fun to be a part of that franchise.
Sam, how about you?
For me personally, I feel kind of attached to the franchise, not just being there since the first one, but it was kind of like one of my first games, actually. I had done some stuff before, some indie stuff, and nothing really that was quite the scale of Mass Effect. So for me, it was a big deal, and it was very exciting to not just work on a game of this scale, but also work on having that as one of my first things kind of out of the gate.
You, Sam, had the opportunity to score one of my personal favorite moments in any game I've ever played, and it happens in the very first Mass Effect. And it would be Commander Shepard's very first encounter with a Reaper. And the script writing here, speaking about what Chris was saying about just the sci-fi canon, I mean, the script writing in this scene, I think, is magnificent. And the music is so appropriate. So what can you tell me about writing for that scene?
Casey Hudson had a bunch of musical references for Mass Effect 1. And one of those was actually music from Star Trek films, the ones scored by Goldsmith. Some of that was the inspiration as far as the low strings and low brass, that kind of ominous sound.
When you wrote it, did you have any idea how significant that theme was to become?
No. It's kind of funny because you write these things and you really, as you're writing them, there's no sense of what's going to happen to it. You know, is it going to be kind of a smaller theme or something bigger that lasts a while? And no, you really, it's kind of unexpected.
So Some of the other themes from Mass Effect 1, though, came back. And one of those was Uncharted Worlds, which everybody loves. So tell me about that piece.
That piece was actually one of my demo tracks for Mass Effect 1.
Oh, wow.
Believe it or not. Yeah, and I remember early on I was demoing for it, and that was something I came up with. And the reference was Risky Business, believe it or not.
Seriously?
Yeah. If you listen to, I think the track's called Love on a Real Train. Actually made it into the game. I never really intended it to be there, but and now it's been there through all three of them.
What other themes of yours have kind of trickled their way in that maybe you didn't expect?
Well, the main theme makes a comeback,
mm-hmm.
and the victory theme, which happens at the end of the first Mass Effect. I sort of had a plan to bring it into Mass Effect 2, but that didn't happen. It's kind of hard to plan ahead these things on where you're going to use certain themes because you don't really know what's going to happen
sure.
in the sequel.
Sure.
But it made a comeback in the third game, though. And, of course, Sovereign's theme peaks here and there in the third game.
Chris and Sasha, you wrote a ton of music for Mass Effect 3. And actually, you know, one of the things that unfortunately happens when teams of composers write is a lot of people get miscredited, right?
No, that's only natural when there's you know, I think they've got, what, like 3 hours of music in the game or something. And, you know, obviously you don't know who's who's during the game.
But. Well, it's frustrating when you read, you know, when you, this is Sasha, when you go on YouTube and, you know, these people listen to all these tracks and then you have these comments, you know, and then this guy did this. Oh, he's great, you know, and you're like, oh my God, that's my tech, you know. But you can't say anything because we're not supposed to. It's just the way it is. I mean, like you said, with this amount of people on the team, it's okay, you know.
So how much did you actually score for the game then?
We did about just a little over an hour and a half.
I was working, when was that, 2003, 2004, I had an opportunity to pitch for a big Ubisoft title. And at the time, I was working by myself, so I was looking for somebody to collaborate with. And back in that time, it wasn't really common for composers to, you know, team up and sort of work together.
Right.
So people were kind of weirded out. They were like, wait, you need what? And yeah, I just wanted to have somebody, you know, who knows more about orchestral music than I do and who knows how to write it really well. So it happens that I actually go onto this forum. I don't even remember.
It was Northern Sounds.
Something, yeah. Where I thought or I figured there's professional people there and posted a looking, you know, to collaborate with somebody for a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't expect anything. And I got, I think, 50 emails the next day.
Gee.
And Chris was one of them. And I think... you know, I kind of sort of narrowed it down pretty quickly because Chris wasn't in L.A. You know, we just connected and worked on this pitch together. And actually, we did not get that job. But it was a good experience. And we have been working together ever since.
Yeah, it's really weird how it all turned out, too, because that particular forum is not something that I frequented very often. And I just happened to go on there that one day and saw this post. And it did seem... like
legit.
It was like, yeah, it felt legit because you see that kind of stuff all the time. But I was still not totally sure and like, maybe this is just some fanboy looking to collect music from composers or something. So I actually didn't send him any music because, Sasha, I think you said like, oh, you know, send me send me tracks or something. And
right.
I was like, I don't know. That sounds fishy. So I just emailed him and and gave him like my credit list. And I had just finished the first God of War back then, so I was proud of that. But
oh, definitely.
To pad up the resume a bit, these are things that are not on my website anymore, but I had a little game called Barbie of Swan Lake. But, you know, it's pretty amazing to think, you know, 6 years later, going from Barbie of Swan Lake to Mass Effect 3. That's pretty cool.
Sam, I very much enjoyed the piece called The Fate of the Galaxy because it changes tone quite a bit toward the end. Portions of the Citadel theme kind of come back. What can you tell me about that piece?
That one actually has some more Star Trek influence in the beginning part with, once again, it's like low strings and this kind of brooding sound, foreboding. And then it kind of changes around 50 seconds. That kind of brings in the whole Mass Effect sound. The synths and the six-note motif that people are familiar with that's been kind of introduced in the first game.
Sasha, one of my favorite tracks of yours is the track Prothean Beacon, because there are so many layers happening here.
Right, there's lies.
And very many layers that are kind of happening off in the distance. And I'd love to hear about how you constructed this piece and also a very great scene, if you haven't played it yet.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful scene.
The track is obviously very heavy synthesized. I think it's mostly synthesizers, in fact. You know, it's so hard. I mean, I could go in detail about how this track was constructed, but when I get, you know, like a mission or a scene, I will sit down and sort of think, what do I feel? And then try to take these emotions and try to find the sound for it and then do the sound design, obviously, which is what I do. For me, it's important that when you hear this track, that it's sort of like an adventure. You're sort of taken on a journey that reflects what's happening in the scene.
Yeah, you know, it really, that track really does evolve over time, and it is mostly synthetic, but I like how it has this sort of organic nature to it. There is a bit of live vocal, like, way in the background that you can hear that I think helps bring that organic quality to it also.
Exactly.
What's cool about that track, too, is that the game is just so huge and epic all the time that it's kind of nice to have this mystical chill-out track once in a while.
Another piece that did that for you, it seems like, for both you and Chris, is the Aralak Company piece. Again, this one starts in a different place.
Absolutely.
Than where it ends. Very different place. So can you tell me what's happening during this piece?
This piece actually plays, and I think I just played this last night again, was when one of the Krogans sacrifices himself. For Shepard's cause, I mean, for the entire cause to save Earth, obviously. Mm-hmm. The trick is in that the first part is gameplay, and the second half of the cue that you hear is actually written for the cinematic. I don't think there were two separate pieces, but in order to sort of to tie them together, it's pretty tricky, and they really did a great job. It's a really smooth transition.
Yes.
Yeah, and the track actually by itself works really well, too, with the piano motif, sort of like emphasizing the, you know, the loss of a friend and basically somebody sacrificing themselves in war.
Sam, when I was a kid, games made me cry because I couldn't beat a level. But now they make me cry because of moments like your song, I Was Lost Without You. That was such a moving scene for me between my shepherd and, for me, it was Liara. So what can you tell me about writing this piece?
That was actually one of my favorite ones to work on. Rob sent me a bunch of video files of the various romance scenes, which is kind of, it's just research, that's all. Just a bunch of, you know, just researching love scenes, that's all.
Just loads and loads of video anime.
Right. Again, what are you doing?
Research. Sam.
How many? How many video files are we talking here?
Let's move on.
Yeah. Anyway.
No. Let's hear it.
No, but there are various scenes. Some were conversations where you're kind of building a relationship with your love interest. Mm-hmm. And then there was a few where they're actually, you know, there's a culmination of what they've been working towards. So one scene actually that I kind of focused on when writing the music was the romance between Shepard and Liara. It's kind of funny you bring that up because that's actually one of my favorite ones too. Mm-hmm. The writer on that, I don't want to butcher her last name, but it's Sylvia F. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
She wrote the scene actually, and it's just really well written, I think, dialogue wise, and the whole scene and the pacing. So I kind of narrowed in on that one. And so the music is actually divided into sections. There's a piano piece that we just kind of called the intimacy music, where it's just this soft piano loop that plays in the background during conversations. Mm-hmm. And then there's two more levels. One is another piano piece that is more as you get closer to the culmination. And then there's the actual full-on orchestral and synth romance piece. And for that one, I actually brought in a live violinist friend of mine, Jeff Ball, and he recorded about 8 takes, I think, of violin and layered it over the track to add a bit of realism and a bit of a human touch to it. And I had a cellist, Darren Cullen, who also contributed. They did a great job on it. Talking to the writer who did the scene, and apparently, I'm not sure how many scenes they did this for sure they did it with Shepard and Liara. They actually motion captured, like an actual couple, just kind of hanging out and acting the scene out together, and that's how they kind of captured that chemistry. Oh. And I didn't even know that until today. Isn't that amazing?
Sasha, what are some of the pieces that really had an effect on you?
One of my favorites still, even though it's, you know, it's pretty over the top, but I tend to like that kind of stuff too. I really like the Reaper chase. That one was, for us, I think, just kind of like, you know, one of those kitchen sink cues where you just put everything in and make it as over the top as possible. The scene that it accompanies, I can't wait to get there. Just seeing the sort of the unfinished gameplay of it. When we were writing it, it was pretty epic.
You know, some pieces they start and are for a certain purpose but end up used differently. So the character creation screen theme, as you want to call it, kind of started up as a completely different piece and just evolved into that. It's just, you know, mellow, slow, and not too over the top. And I kind of have to say that would be one of my favorite pieces.
I was actually going to ask you both about that piece specifically, because that's a place mm-hmm. where we, you know, you can either spend probably 30 seconds on that menu, or you can spend an hour. But you didn't know that they were going to put that track there, or did you know?
The track actually started out as, believe it or not, as a combat cue.
Okay.
I believe there is another version of it that is very close to this, which is actually still the combat cue. But how this game works was that we have, you know, sort of these combat cues, which are called combat high. And then we have a medium version of that same cue, which is a little bit toned down. And then a low version, which has fewer elements in it. And I just came up with this version one night, and I emailed it to Rob. And he said, oh, this is great. We're going to use it as the, you know, character creation screen. And that's how that came about.
Yeah, it's just one of those happy accidents where you write one cue for one thing, and then you kind of put a little distance between yourself and the music for a few days, and you listen again, and you think, oh, you know, actually, if we took this out and this out and change this one little thing here, and suddenly it works for an entirely different scene that it was never really meant for, but it's kind of cool when that happens.
This is Sam. It's kind of neat how BioWare will take what we've written and what they decide to do with certain pieces of music that weren't designed for what we were told they were. And for example, like the main menu theme was actually, I wrote that for a speech scene at the very end of the game, and they just dropped it in, and I was like, okay, sure, and it worked out okay.
There are different intensity levels of these tracks. My personal problem with this is that developers would always say, okay, well, it's easy, just take this out or this string line or this, and it just never works that way. And I'm sure Sam can concur on that, that you end up basically writing two more new tracks. Because, you know, when you have a medium intensity track for a battle cue, when you remove certain elements, sometimes or most of the time, something doesn't feel right. It's sort of, wait, point feels kind of weird, or so you just basically keep certain elements but then rewrite stuff to make it work better, and it's a lot of work, and it's also a lot of fun, but I think most people don't actually know that.
Yeah, I think they really kind of nailed the interactivity with the music this time particularly well. I do remember playing last night and noticing, because, you know, each one of these big combat cues we deconstruct you know, multiple times over. And I don't know exactly how they're running in the game, if they're all exactly playing at the same time and they just drop one out. And then,
but I think they're like live cross fading into each other.
It actually really stuck out to me last night, because I was listening for it. But I thought, oh, wow, they did a great job swapping between, you know, like
different
a
levels,
heavy
yeah.
combat down to a light to a medium and back. And it really worked flawlessly, I thought. So they kudos to Rob and Mike for doing that.
Obviously, all three of us thank the guys over at BioWare, EA, Rob, Michael Kent, Casey, of course. And, you know, we're just happy to be a part of this franchise, and glad everybody enjoys the music. And Chris?
Yeah, and thanks to you, too, for taking the time to interview us.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Thanks.
Oh, well, that's my job, is to thank you.
No, we thank you.
It's been a pleasure. So thanks for having us. And yeah, the whole BioWare team was just, they did a phenomenal job on this game. It's out of this world.
They did.
It really is.
They did.
It's good stuff. Now I'll let you go so we can all get back and play it.
Okay. Let's all play it. Okay.
Good idea.
You've been listening to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese, and our technical director is Sam Keenan. Thanks to KPFK in Los Angeles and WBEZ in Chicago for additional technical support. Our next episodes focus on Darren Korb's award-winning music for Bastion and Austin Wintory's gorgeous score for Journey. And we'll have one more special episode before taking a very short summer break. If you have comments or questions about any of our shows, feel free to send your feedback to classicalmpr.org/topscore. You can also ask questions and follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Topscore Podcast.
Yo mismo me sumaría a su campaña para mantener el puritarismo yanqui intacto.
Mismo
lo voy a acompañar para que pongamos rejas y vigilemos con armas de fuego toda la frontera. Con Canadá.
Spanish, no.
Para evitar que los liberales del norte nos invadan, especialmente esos que hablan francés. Y aparte que se dejen de traficar fármacos y otras drogas que venden más baratas por allá.
Is it? It is.
Este es un tema de seguridad nacional, no más extranjero, claro que sí.
Hello? Hello, can you guys hear me in studio?
So some of you asked me to tell you what I thought about the end of Mass Effect 3, and here goes. The first time I went through the end and I got to the choices, you know, the blue, red, or green ending, I walked up to the red ending just to check it out because Captain Anderson had gone up there, and the game forced me to actually choose that ending. That was super annoying. But I let it play out, I kept watching. I got to the part where the Normandy lands and Liara walked off the Normandy with Joker. How? She was with me for the final push and clearly died. And how did the Normandy get into space and how did it outrun the explosion? Well, anyway, I went through the bother of loading a previous save and this time brought Javik with me because I just didn't care if Javik died. I picked the blue ending, and the two differences more or less were that Javik came off the Normandy with Liara, and the different color that indicates the Reaper color and the destroyed mass relays. So it ended up that my Shepard went through the scene with the elusive man and the catalyst twice, and I totally felt indoctrinated both times. We're supposed to, based on how that cinematic with the elusive man plays out. I felt manipulated by the catalyst. It's like we've all decided to ignore the fact that Shepard spent three games surrounded by Reaper tech. So yes, I'm one of the weird ones who subscribes to the indoctrination theory. And the fact that I'm recording this inevitably means I'm wrong. Honestly, though, it's like everybody is angry because there is no happy ending. It's not even really bittersweet when Joker and friends pop out of the Normandy at the end. Whatever, I'm working on finishing the game completely for the second time, and I'm very much looking forward to more stories from BioWare.